Mr. Enns.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Here.
Mr. Hammond.
Here.
Mr. Heller.
Here.
Ms. Marks. Just checking here. Okay, I'm going to show Ms. Marks' absence for roll call, and I will follow up with her. And Mr. Newton.
Here.
Ms. Ortiz-Legg. And I am not showing her. Mr. Pichon?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Here.
And Mr. Brabeau?
Here.
We do have a quorum. Let me just double check and make sure that I don't have somebody on the attendee side. No, I don't.
So it appears we're just missing Supervisor Arnold and Supervisor Ortiz-Legg.
Yes, that's correct. And we have Ms. Arnold in, I have her as absent for jury duty.
Sure.
I think I'm going to run right next door because I think Dawn's in her office and I'm just going to, I can hear stuff.
Okay.
So I'm going to just make sure she realizes what time it is.
Okay, great. And I do see Ms. Marks joined us. Thank you, Ms. Marks. I'll have you for roll call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, then. Lynn's going to look for Debbie, but I will go ahead and proceed with the Pledge of Allegiance. So please join me in saluting our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic
of which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty
and justice for all.
Thank you. Toss the chair out a little far in there. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over briefly to our counsel, Linda Summers-Smith, regarding report from closed session at our regular board meeting on August 11th. Linda, are you there?
Yeah, sorry. On that, we had no reportable action.
All right. Thank you. And that's for the public record. Okay, we're ready. Do we have any public comment regarding matters not on this agenda, but under the purview of the IWMA?
At this time, if a matter of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. I don't have anybody for public comment.
All right, thank you. And we will proceed to our acting executive director's report. And if you could, Cheryl, if you could change the attendance to reflect that Supervisor Ortiz-Legg joined us.
I have. Thank you, Mr. Brabeau.
Thank you. Okay, Patty.
Patty, you might be muted.
Sorry about that. You think I'd know about Zoom by now. So before we move forward, does anybody have any questions on the payables or the credit card report? Okay, hearing none, let's move forward. So I just wanted a little FYI here. You know, we do have a full agenda today, so I will be brief, but a friendly reminder that the three executive committee meetings for the rest of the year, normally held on Wednesdays, are going to be moved to Friday, October 1st, Friday, October 29th, Monday, November 29th, all at 11 a.m., just so everybody's on the same page. Next slide, please. And just an FYI for our full board. We're going to be going out for RFP, thanks to the direction and feedback from the executive committee. And this is going to be for the fiscal year 22-23. We're going to be doing an annual audit RFP, a legal counsel RFP, and a school and business education RFP. The following year, we're going to be doing the hazardous waste RFP. Next slide. And next slide. Now, We've been getting a lot of questions about, back up one slide. We've been getting a lot of questions about our established or edible food recovery program for SB 1383. So I wanted to bring everybody up to speed on that as fast as possible. As you can see from this slide, this agency early on partnered with the food bank. We've held two webinars, one for edible food collectors and the other for generators, in particular, tier one generators, to be exact. My colleague Kelly York and I personally have visited all 53 tier one locations. Bottom line here, tier ones must sign an SB 1383 edible food agreement with an edible food collection organization. So when Kelly and I walk in the front door to provide education on this topic, we have made this transition easy by giving each location a sample agreement and edible food collection contacts. Additionally, Kelly and staff have been conducting, you know, follow-up phone calls, answering questions, and sending out reminder letters. So more on this as we head towards the January 1st, 2022 deadline. Before we move forward, are there any questions about the edible food recovery program? Hearing none. Go ahead.
Thank you. So, the 53 locations. So, we're talking generators. That's hospitals, etc.
Actually, not hospitals at this point in time. They're mostly large grocery stores, food distributors. So they're the big players in the game, right?
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next slide, please. Okay. Now I'm going to have Rob Hilton, hopefully he's on right at this moment, give you an update on the franchise agreements. He can jump in and give the board a brief history of the number of amendments and updates that be based on SB 1383 for the seven agencies, even the county and each of the special districts, and then how you solicited feedback from staff and their legal representative teams, and then the drafts that went back and forth between those teams, and then finally, where we are today with the franchise agreement process. Rob, can you speak to that?
Thanks, Patty, and good to be with you, board. So, yes, I'm very pleased to report that we have gotten the franchise agreements into all of the agencies and hopefully all of the haulers' hands at this point to start working through. As Patty indicated, we started the process by drafting a term sheet, reviewed that with both the jurisdictions and with the industry folks, got feedback on that, turned that into a model amendment, got feedback on that again, and then customized each of those model amendments to each of the franchise agreements that's in place. At the end of the day, we did, I think, 22 different franchise amendments amongst all of the agencies and different configurations of contracts that are out there. And we now have those in the agency's hands. And I'm pleased to report that we've participated in meetings with the Templeton Community Services District, as well as with the cities that franchise with Waste Connections to begin the negotiations process. Both of those meetings with your industry partners were very productive. We got good clarifications and began to really understand each other and understand sort of what the exact requirements are and who will do what. I think, that has been a healthy discussion and will continue. And hopefully the jurisdictions that are contracting with the same hauler can work together to keep those rules as consistent as possible to support the industry in delivering these services successfully. So our hope is that over the next month or two, the business terms of the franchise agreements will get worked out between the jurisdictions and their service providers. And then the rate adjustment mechanism that you have in place, I understand that everybody is up for a base year either this year or next year. And so those base years will contemplate the requirements of SB 1383 and will be included in the Prop 218 processes and rate adjustment processes that should be going in front of your city councils and special district boards over the next year or so. And so that will lead to some discussion about what the implementation timeline is, what can be done in advance of those rate adjustments happening versus what things the contractors are going to need to hold on until they get those rate adjustments. So all of that to say, productive discussions are being had. Things are moving towards conclusion. Glad to continue to be of support to anybody that needs us.
Thank you, Rob, for that update. I greatly appreciate it. This was a huge and is still a huge lift. Really appreciate your help on this. Next slide. Next up, member agency approved waivers and the SB 1383 letters. Recently, this agency sent out to all the member cities, special districts, the county, and even the haulers for feedback, the waiver application, SB 1383 notification letters, and the edible food agreement letters. Again, this was for feedback, which we received, greatly appreciate it, and have incorporated. So moving forward, you'll see this agency and our field staff working closely with businesses who qualify for waivers, or we're going to be distributing those SB 1383 reminder letters and the edible food agreement reminder letters, making sure that everybody's informed about the compliance, the deadline, January 1st, 2022. Any questions on this topic before I move forward? Hearing none, we'll move forward. Next slide, please. Next up is the model ordinances. This is another big lift. Special thanks to the hard work, again, of Rob Hilton and the HF&H team in developing the county, the seven cities, and the 10 special districts. If I'm not mistaken, and Rob, please correct me, 18 customizable SB 1383 ordinances. Again, just like the franchise agreements, HF&H incorporated the feedback from staff and legal, and now those ordinances are ready for each respective board, council, and their agendas. Just a reminder to this board, your staff will be agendizing this soon for your review and hopefully approval, given that they need to be completed by January 1st, 2022. So in addition, staff here at the IWMA, Cheryl Price in particular, developed and led two more webinars for SB 1383. The CalGreen regulations was held on August 26th. And the MWELO was held on August 27th. Both webinars were directed specifically for building and planning staff at each of the seven cities and the county. Bottom line, all affected parties are clear now on what the new regulations are and the regulatory reporting requirements. With that, I conclude my oral report unless there's any other questions.
Maddie, I take it from that all the jurisdictions were represented at those webinars that Cheryl held then?
Well, actually, no. Sometimes it doesn't apply to a jurisdiction or a special district, but all the seven cities and the county were there.
All right. Thank you. Okay. That concludes Patty's report. Anybody else have any other questions for Patty? If not, we'll proceed to our consent agenda, which consists of items 7 through 10, I should say. And at this point, we'll see if there's any public comment on the consent agenda.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment on the consent agenda, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. And I don't have anybody here for consent agenda.
Okay. All right. Thank you. No comment. Does any board member have any questions regarding consent agenda? If not, then entertain a motion on the consent agenda.
Hammond makes a motion to approve consent items 7 through 10.
This is Keith. I'll second.
Okay. So we have a motion by Hammond, second by Storton. Can you go ahead and call the roll?
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Mr. Storton.
Yes.
Ms. Bright.
Yes.
Ms. Compton.
Yes.
Mr. Enns.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Ms. Marks.
Yes.
Mr. Newton.
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Legge.
Yes.
Mr. Pichon.
Yes.
And Mr. Barbeau.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. Let's move on to item number 11, Cold Canyon for Processing Facility Notice of Termination of License. Patty, can you take that?
I sure can. You know, as you can see from your board packet, the staff pages begin on 24, but the letter we're discussing today is located on page 37. Note the date on that letter is August 27, 21. Waste Connections is terminating our license agreement to use the school education program room for field trips at the material recovery facility there at Coal Canyon. Since receiving this letter, I've spoken to Mr. Ryan, the manager at the recovery center, and he has, on both occasions, made it clear that he wants to stand firm. The license agreement will be terminated. The executive committee asked that I reach out to Mr. Ryan's supervisor, which I did, and she did respond back to me on the phone today and said that she, too, would like to see this license agreement terminated, but would like to work with us moving forward on possible a mobile unit or virtual or some other way to still have the field trips without using that room. So unless there's any other objections from the board, staff will work with Science Discovery to remove the exhibits pictured on page 38 in the room, or excuse me, pictured on page 38 of your packet, and then we'll remove all that equipment from the room. The good news is one of the board members has already volunteered to find a new home for the exhibits. So does anyone have any questions on this topic before we move on?
Patty, what if you could explain to the board what impact this might or might not have on our education expenditures at all?
Well, recently we haven't been using the room at all due to COVID, like within the last year. And so what we've been doing is virtual presentations showing the Material Recovery Center and as well as the landfill, as well as even HZI. So as far as decreasing the expenditures, it won't necessarily, again, because the lease was minimal, $1 a year. So it really won't have a big impact or a significant impact on our expenditures.
And Patty, the staff report indicates the license agreement was signed in February 2020, but that was a renewal of some sort, right? How long have we actually been in that room?
Well, you know, the IWMA actually built this room well before I started at the IWMA with grant funding. So it's been, I don't know, forgive me, 20 plus years now. So we have been using it. Unfortunately, we didn't start a lease agreement with this group beginning in 2020. Prior to that, it was a handshake to use the room. It was a good partnership, no problems with it at all. But moving forward, it looks like we're looking to go in a different direction.
Right. No, I understand. I just want everybody to understand that we've actually been there for many years.
Many years.
Mm-hmm. I see we have questions or comments. I'm not sure who was first, but I'm going to go with Jan first and then Jeff.
Chairman Barbeau, Hammond, question for Patty. Patty, did they give you a reason for termination? Basically, they want to have it for higher and better use of their facility, just use the space, or what was the main reason?
Well, it was a combination of reasons. Number one, COVID, Delta variants, other variants. They felt that the exhibits were slightly dated, right? And they wanted to do something else. And also, they used that room for their staff meetings and their when their upper brass come to town, it gives them space to really spread out and have meetings uninterrupted. So it's a multi-use space. And there were multiple reasons why they wanted us to discontinue this license agreement.
Okay, thank you.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
Jan?
I just wonder if staff could consider the different options and whether or not we really need to have a centralized education room next to a landfill. So I think it's unfortunate, but it's a good opportunity to really take kind of a deep dive into whether or not we really want to continue to proceed in this direction. And I am the board member who said I would try to find another home for these various exhibits if possible, but it makes me wonder if there aren't perhaps more up-to-date alternatives that are also easier for the schools to handle in terms of their budgets. And, you know, school buses are expensive. So perhaps at another time we could look at the different options as a board.
Jeff?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I found the tour of the facility and that room to be very helpful when I first came on the board here. And I'm wondering if there's some desire by this board to work to continue the license on a limited basis, because I found it very, very helpful.
Thank you. Next will be Dawn, but I would comment on that earlier this year, they had sent, you know, Brooks a termination notice, and I forget, you know, if he talked Jeff Ryan or Mr. Ryan out of it, or if he went to the higher up, but, you know, we've already been through this once, and Patty's followed up with their higher ups. They're fairly determined at this point in time. I would comment, though, that also that as my wife was a fourth grade teacher for many years, and they very much looked forward to the physical visit because it also entailed an opportunity to see the Murph doing recycling in action. So while you can do this stuff virtually, it's not the same experience, might be good from a cost perspective. But irregardless of how we feel about it, they've asked us to leave. They're pretty firm on it. Okay, so Dawn, you question or comments?
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, just comments on, you know, the changing world. And I do think that this educational piece is so important. Two possibilities, or three perhaps, is that even in some of our each towns, we have exploration station kind of places where, you know, little mini garbage units could be set up for children. I also really think it's an opportunity to put out for bid other educational potential with 1383 in regards to other organizations that may be closer and could incorporate this into their curriculum that actually go to schools right now and do something. And I've mentioned this before, but the One Cool Earth Garden group seems to really dovetail. And I think all of this gives us an opportunity for the organization to reevaluate educational proponent and expenditures and what else is out there, perhaps. I'm taking a look at that.
Thank you, Dawn. And before I go to Robert, we comment that we noted in Patty's executive director report that we are going out to an RFP for the educational contract. And the reason that's important is that has not been done in 20 years. So I think, you know, may partly address the issue you raised.
Thank you.
Robert?
Yes, I just wanted to reinforce that I know that the Cold Canyon wants us to get that out of there. And I had visited Mike DeMilo's shop about a year ago. And it looks like maybe this stuff could be used in his virtual program as backdrop and help them. So I think I'd look there as where to go.
Thank you, Robert. And Patty, could you clarify the stuff there? I think you said it and it may have escaped me. All of the stuff there, was that owned by the IWMA or was it owned by Mike DeMilo at Science Discovery?
It's really the IWMA who's paid for all those things.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Okay, Dawn, I see your hand raised, but I think you just didn't take it down. Did you have any further comment? Okay, does anybody else have any further question or comment? Okay, well then I think that there's no particular action.
Public comment.
Provide further direction to staff. And is there any public comment on this issue?
Oh, good. Okay.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make comment on item number 11, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. Okay. Okay, Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Good afternoon, board. I'm thrilled to hear this discussion about creating the idea of bringing an education center into each town. And I know Grover Beach has a little science discovery area. Perhaps we could work with the museum here in San Luis Obispo, but it would be an opportunity then for the adults in the community, senior citizens and grandparents and others that don't have children that never get or don't have time to go to a Zoom meeting that is meant for the children. So I'm totally applauding this idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. Okay, so with that, we will move on to item number 12, which begins on page 42 of your agenda packet. Temporary suspension of expenses for the current fiscal year. I'm going to turn it over to Patty.
Okay, so during the last executive committee meeting, the committee asked staff to review and submit back to the executive committee budget line items that could be temporarily placed under a spending freeze. So for full transparency, we've supplied this board with a complete itemized budget. See pages in your budget packet, page 43 through 53. But for the purposes of this discussion, please look closely at the temporary suspension list located on page 54 and 55. So based on staff recommendations and then the feedback from each member of the executive committee, staff has itemized for the full board $500,000 in temporary spending cuts. Additionally, the associated staff pages, page 42, note that there are three vacant positions currently at the IWMA, the clerk of the board, program coordinator, and executive director, saving, not including benefits, about $10,000 per month if not filled. So just a reminder, agenda item 14 will open up staffing for staff to either hire or staffing discussion. Let's see. But before we move forward, does anybody have any questions about this list of temporary suspended line items?
Before I go to questions, Patty, I did want to comment to everybody, reiterate for everybody that this discussion was necessitated because of our budget containing the assumption that the rate increase approved in June would take effect October 1st. And that is not going to occur, as we discussed previously, and we'll discuss further in another agenda item. But that is the driving force behind needing to look at some short-term budget reductions. So with that, I think, Karen, I think I see your hand raised.
Did you say Karen?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, Karen.
Thank you. I didn't have my hand raised, but I do have a question.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm wondering the difference in colors of the blue and the green highlights.
Excellent question. So the blue happens to be the school education program, science discovery. Then moving down into the green section, that happens to be the business, SB 1383, 1826, AB 341, business outreach team, and their expenses.
Very good. Thank you. I appreciate that information.
You bet.
Keith and then Jeff.
Thank you, Chair. Patty, from your perspective, I know you went through this list. Is there anything here that you have heartache about?
Heartache. Anytime you have budget cuts, there is heartache, to be honest. I would really, as you can see, I'm not suggesting cutting the classroom presentations. I think they're very important to teach the children, especially since we're going back into what is a COVID Delta, who knows what variant. I noticed last time that a lot of parents were sitting right next to the kids on the couch during these presentations. So it looks as though, if anything, we're going to be going back into the virtual presentations. Don't know that for sure. There's a lot up in the air on that. I also have a lot of heartburn when it comes to any cuts that would be to that field staff or SB 1383, AB 341, that $377,000. If we don't have staff in the field, we will not get our cities and our special districts into compliance for SB 1383 January 1st, 2022. So those give me a significant heartburn, let's put it that way. And as you can see, I didn't recommend placing cuts there.
Okay, that's all the questions I had.
Thank you. Jeff and then Jan.
Thank you, Chair. So Patty, in looking at the budget here and the $500,000, does that, just so that I'm clear, does that assume that the three positions will be vacant for the rest of the year? Is that what this budget is based on?
Yeah, this is not including those positions at all.
Okay, not including. So on page 44, where you have salary and benefits, the approved 2021 budget at $618,000 and the 2122 at $1,000,024. That is the budget without those three positions filled. Is that correct?
It's fully staffed, if I understand your question correctly.
It's fully staffed, so that means those three positions would be filled?
That's correct.
So that's what
executive director. Right. Sorry to interrupt or talk over you.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then also on the 2021 column, there are a lot of numbers that don't seem there, which show up in the 2122 column. So were these things that were not accounted for, or for example, computer software descriptions at $75,900? Yeah. I don't see anything on the 2021 budget.
Right. So what happened is with SB 1383, we had to purchase software to manage all the influx of data that's going to be coming in, and it's going to be required to be reported by CalRecycle. So there has been some significant changes when it comes to SB 1383 to ramp up to meet those regulatory deadlines. And that's one of them.
Okay. So the columns with no number on the 2021 budget, basically the 2122 is for SB 1383.
Patty, do you mind if I jump in there and ask?
Go ahead, Barb.
So if you're looking at the expense list, correct, Mr. Heller?
Yes.
So remember that the 2021 budget that you're looking at was actually the 1920 budget done like 2 to 3 years ago. We passed the interim budget for 2021 due to COVID and other changes. And Brooks didn't feel like we had the right information to pass a new budget. So we just rolled forward the old budget from 1920. And so when I went through and created the 2021 budget, I went through and rebudgeted and allocated funds to basically the correct GL account so that we could track our expenses better. That's why there's a difference there, why you're not seeing some stuff in from 2021, but you are seeing them in 2021-22.
Okay. That's very helpful. Thank you for that, Barbara.
You're welcome.
Let's see.
Charles Hammond, a question.
John, Jeff.
Hold on 1 second.
Sorry.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second. That's okay. Let's see what else. Okay. Those are my main questions. Right. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Jan.
I just wanted to point out that this the title of this item is temporary suspension of expenses. So what we're looking at is suspending these expenditures between now and December, and then when we come back in the new year, either in January or February, we'll have a much clearer sense of the fiscal impact of the county withdrawing from the IWMA, and we'll also have a clearer sense of how the various jurisdictions 218 processes are going. So it's a matter of temporary belt type tightening now until the dust settles a bit so that we have a clearer sense of where we're really at financially. So I just wanted to kind of do that big picture thing. So we're not really talking about cutting these things, like cutting the oil collection containers, as much as saying between now and the end of the year, we're not going to buy any more of these oil containers. Maybe in January, February, if we need them, we will start buying them. So just that's the basic context. There's so much uncertainty. We need to create kind of a financial safety belt for ourselves right now.
Thank you, John. John, go ahead.
Thank you, Charles. Patty, I mean, what I'm looking at is essentially bare bones operation, meeting all the mandates from the Sacramento. And is there anything in this budget then that's frosting on the cake? In other words, that we could still cut, but still yet meet our mandated, you know, position here with the county. So are there things here that we can still look at to remove?
No, okay. This is it.
So you're telling me this is bare bones. That's what I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's bare bones.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Okay. So these are, you know, you see what the recommendations are. The question is, I think as far as action today is essentially we need approval of this so that the staff can carry out these temporary reductions. Jeff, did you have a question?
No, I'm prepared to make a motion if you want.
Well, what about public comment here?
Oh, thank you.
That's a very good point there, Jan.
Sorry about that. Thanks, yeah, Jeff.
Let's defer and see if we have any public comment on this agenda item.
A member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. I do have one for public comment. Okay, Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Jan, for your idea to suspend expenses that aren't necessarily needed or part of the operation. You know, immediately I think of the PSAs in the theater, possibly that the theaters would be put on hold and because of COVID, and say, hey, we'll pick up and honor that commitment for in January. But again, back to the $600,000 that's allocated for science discovery, that money is actually used for the whole public. A week and a half ago, I dropped in at Atascadero, and two stores had more polystyrene on the shelves for sale than they have, I think, residents in Atascadero. And that neither manager knew about the ordinance. So I'm curious, how is IDMMA reaching out to stores if and me, the public, seem to have to do this, or find this violation happening all the time and the managers aren't aware of it. So I'd like to see money being used where it's destined for. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. Jeff, I'll go back to you. You had a motion. I assume there's no other public comment, right, Barbara?
That is correct.
Okay. Jeff, you had a motion?
Yes, I appreciate the public comment, and it does raise the issue of the advertising, radio ads, flyers, and movie theaters at $40,000.
I can note, Patty did have on the list to postpone all non-committed advertising to the tune of $36,000. You know, there's a few advertising expenses that are committed to, can't be, withdrawn, if you will.
Okay.
But, so that is part of the plan.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. In that case, I will move approval, item 12.
Second for discussion from Hammond.
Okay, we have a motion by Heller, second by Hammond, to approve staff recommended temporary expense reductions.
Any... Charles?
Yes. Yeah.
Discussion. It's the city of Paso Robles' position that we probably ought to be thinking of hiring a third-party consultant to basically audit the performance of our IWMA and also its contractors. just to get another look from the outside. And also that qualified professional would also want to do a rate study. And this will be in the next item, but essentially I think until we know really what our costs are and what we need to do, how can we really, plan a budget? That's why I asked the question to Patty, is this bare bones? I'm sure she thinks it is, but it could be that maybe a third party consultant might have other ideas. And that is our city's position, that we might want to do this just to get a good outside look on our performance as a agency. So I'm going to throw that out there just for discussion, see if it might go anywhere.
But I think, as you kind of noted, John, that will partially come up on the next agenda item.
Right, I know.
So I think we might want to just defer that discussion as part of that, because, here we have is a list of recommended cuts, that will get us, help cover the gap, because we're not, going to be receiving the revenue anticipated when we anticipated it. Okay. So I kind of like, maybe just defer that discussion until the next agenda.
Okay, very good.
Any further comments on the motion? Okay, then let's go ahead and call the roll.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
No.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
I'm going to refrain from voting on this. I'm going to refrain from voting on this.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Compton. I have you abstaining. Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson? Mr. Gibson, do I have you? Mr. Gibson, you are on mute.
Yes, my vote is yes.
Your vote is yes. Thank you. Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Abstain.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Okay, our vote does pass 9 with 1 negative and 2 abstain.
Chair Burbeau, Jan Marks, I just wanted to point out that we have taken no action on the 3 open positions. That may be something we want to take up on a future agenda. But just to clarify for the public and everyone else that we are still keeping those positions open at this point. We're not moving forward with them, but they're not part of the formal budget suspension motion that we just passed.
Correct, unless any member of the board has concern about that particular, about what Jan pointed out, that is essentially we are not for the time being filling the 2 staff positions, and we will have a separate discussion regarding the executive director under item 14. So thank you for that, Jan. Okay, all right, I think then we'll go ahead and proceed to item 13. And for that initial discussion, I'm gonna turn that over to Linda Summer-Smith, our counsel.
So this agenda item we anticipated would have a great deal of discussion. And in fact, staff has been inundated with a lot of comments on this already. So the bottom line was the IWMA is operating right now in a vacuum in terms of budgetary certainty. And so its direction, or the staff direction, was to implement the fee increase as soon as possible. And along those lines, there was a proposed letter included with the packet to go to the agencies and special districts, and also with a copy to the haulers, in part to engender some communication and discussion of this item, which I believe it has had that purpose. In the information that it's come to staff, which hasn't gone to the board or the executive committee yet, there's been a lot of concern that there is no effective way to do a 218 based on the information and the county leaving. And that really has a lot of different arms, because it's not as simple as the rate increase. It's also the tipping fee increase and the possible amendment to the joint powers agreement, all of which require the cooperation of the county. And without the county's cooperation, we're in this vacuum of knowing what money could come in, even if we did move forward, and what the expenses would be. So this item is really looking to all of you to discuss some of these issues with the understanding the staff would like to go forward with the increase, but also understands that the interim IWMA executive director did indicate that we would put this off, and may have indicated in several discussions that we were going to work with the districts on putting things off. If we go forward, the only way to effectively go forward might be, and this is what staff has discussed, but of course not made any decisions, is updating the study and calling a special meeting in October to have updated information, just because there's a sense that the fee rate is not necessarily supported by sufficient information. And just so you know what staff was thinking, we do have the HFH consultant report. We have input from Rob Hilton, who's a consultant you heard earlier, and the R3 auditor's report. And all of those were used as the basis for the rate increases, but they also were used for the tipping fee, which we may not be able to implement. So that's sort of a broad overview, and I don't know if people have questions or would like to give input, and then we can discuss it further.
Before I'm going to add a couple of comments before we get go to board input. When Linda referred to a lot of correspondence and action in the last few days, I've had discussions with calls from a couple of city managers. This letter that Linda did, kind of had its intended effect, which was try to suss out where the jurisdictions were relative to doing the 218 process. When she's alluding to that, after we had passed the rate resolution in June, Mr. Minnery's counsel sent out a letter it's in the packet, to the jurisdictions saying, hey, IWMA board did this. You need to review internally in your jurisdiction whether this would call for a 218 process in your jurisdiction. City of SLO wrote a letter a little bit later to Mr. Ogren saying, we only want to do one 218 a year. We don't want to do a separate special one for this rate increase. We'd like to delay till January. Mr. Ogren, in an email, indicated, and the rate resolution gave him authority as executive director to allow a delay. He'd indicated an email to SLO that such a delay would essentially be granted. And in a subsequent email, or separate email, kind of indicated to other jurisdictions that might apply to other jurisdictions as well. So when I was wondering why no jurisdiction had scheduled this issue for consideration, the answer I got back was that, well, we thought that we were in the same boat as the city of SLO, and it was going to be delayed till 1 January. So that's why we weren't seeing cities agendize this issue. So now we move forward to the letter Linda sent out, and that we have city managers saying, and city attorneys contacting her, Haller attorneys, et cetera, saying, hey, because the county is going to be leaving, that's obviously going to have some impact on at least the revenue side of the IWMA. And even though this rate increase was about $1,383 implementation costs, that we, cities in particular, would like to see a kind of a recalculation of the rate, see if the rate asked for is adequate, see if that might need to be amended. And we the cities, don't want to have to go through a second 218 process. So we're in this kind of point where we need the revenue. We have passed a rate increase, but we're being asked to resubstantiate it the numbers in light of the county's departure. The county's departure presents some unknowns in terms of what the revenue loss might be. Wouldn't see a significant change in expenditures. In any case, you know, we're being asked to potentially do a recalculation to go to the cities in the CSDs, and to do so quickly so that it could be agendized, go through the process, and be ratified before the end of the year. So that's kind of where we're at. Let me see if we have questions or comments. Jan?
Yes, I'd just like to say that I did have a conversation with Paavo Ogren about this prior to his resignation. And he told me that the data is all there. The facts are all there that would substantiate the 218, that would substantiate, would give the kind of data you need to justify the 218. It's just that the data wasn't packaged in such a way that it was comprehensible and user-friendly for the jurisdictions. So he said it was basically what was necessary was to go back into the figures and repackage them in such a way that the jurisdictions would have an easy time justifying the rate increase to their constituents. So that's what he said. I'm not sure exactly what is being proposed, but do you think a narrowly focused assignment to our consultants could do that kind of repackaging that would, without having to go to a lengthy reexamination of all of the data? That's my question.
Well, my thought process on that would be yes, but with some caveats. I mean, for one thing, you know, we engaged the HF&H consultant for the express purpose of helping us implement 1383. Part of that was to identify the increased costs of doing so and to pursue necessary increase. So having him kind of try to redo it in light of changed circumstances, I think certainly fits in the wheelhouse for the consultant. The caveat is, you know, that data is not necessarily so easily usable because the haulers are somewhat tight with their data. And so, for example, if you look at the MSW report that the county commissioned, you know, it made no specific breakdowns of revenue. It could only speculate that the rural residents represent 25% of the population. Therefore, absent specific data, you know, they might represent 25% of revenue. I think they would represent substantially less because they don't have a lot of commercial activity in those areas. And so they would represent a substantial smaller amount of trash volume, et cetera. Point being, the haulers haven't always been forthcoming, even on our revenue audits, as to, gee, you know, we hold a franchise for Creston, and we also hold a franchise for Templeton. They didn't necessarily break those out. And that wasn't important to us as an agency because we covered the whole county. So I'm not sure how easy or difficult it would be for the consultant working with Patty and Barbara, but I think it certainly fits within their wheelhouse. Keith?
Thank you. I actually, Karen had her hand up first, then Don.
I apologize, Karen. So you want Karen to go ahead then? So Karen, go. Karen, you're muted.
Thank you. I finally got it unmuted. Thank you very much. Keith, you are welcome to go, but thank you. So yes, you know, my city, we really do feel a fiduciary responsibility to our ratepayers to ensure that the fees can be justified So we really would like to see that we delay an enactment of any fees until they can be justified. We certainly would not want to have to go back again, as you mentioned. So we would like to see that either we hire a consultant or modify an existing consultant scope of work to analyze these fees, just to make sure that we are doing right by our ratepayers. However that works, and that really is our position. So however we can do that, that is what we would like to see.
Okay, thank you. Keith, I want to say you, then Dawn, then John Hammond.
Great, thank you very much, Charles. Just a couple of questions. I wanted to clarify as far as our action today. If we were to vote in favor of this, we are asking that rates go into effect October 1st, regardless of the county leaving or staying, regardless of 218 processes happening. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
I'm sorry, you're referring to what's in the staff packet in the agenda?
Yes. Yes. As far as our actions today, as far as what we are trying to do moving forward, as I look at this, it says that by October 1st, the rates, new fees would be effective. So the action that we're asking for today is we want to make those rates effective October 1, regardless of who, what cities are participating, regardless of the county's departure. I guess I'm trying to clarify what the recommendation is on today's item.
Yeah, that's a great question, Keith. I'm going to defer that back to Linda and maybe Patty about what, you know, essentially are the options for this body relative to this issue. I mean, the letter, as Keith's noting, kind of indicates, in our rate resolution indicated these rate increase imposed on the haulers would be effective the 1st of October. So Linda, can you describe what the kind of legal options are for this board?
Okay, so at this point in time, you've got a resolution that says it is going to be implemented. That was the resolution done back in June, that it was going to be implemented October 1st. The purpose of this agenda item was to set forth this letter, which is a proposed letter to the agencies. It hasn't gone out. So what your decision would be today would be to put that letter out or not put that letter out. But one thing that the executive committee and staff did not have at the time this was drafted was information on prior discussions and emails that had gone out by the prior interim director. So now we have a situation where we've got assurances, or not assurances or promises, but statements made that it was going to be delayed. So that sort of is an issue that inserts itself in here and makes it difficult to say we're going to absolutely do it on October 1st, because you know, some of the jurisdictions relied on those statements, which is completely understandable. So to me, we're refocusing this entire discussion on what the next step should be, with the understanding we're not going to be able to implement on October 1st. That's how I see it.
Okay, I appreciate that. So I was a little, I was just a little confused then if the haulers were to raise the rates on October 1st, they would have to do it internally on their own, and then it would be up to the cities to complete their 218 processes, but at some point in time, the haulers would have to recover those fees, which I don't think they'd be very happy about absorbing that on October 1st. So I appreciate that we're having the discussion of the delay. Our situation in June is different today. Some things have happened since then. So I just wanted to clarify exactly what we're trying to do today. I think from my perspective, I've had several conversations with my city manager. I know all the city managers have been talking and have created some dialogue and even some draft documents that will probably come out as we discuss this further. But I think there needs to be clarification as to exactly who is participating in the IWMA. And I think each of our cities need to have those internal discussions based upon the new situations that we're in. So my thought is to delay any further action and allow our cities to have that discussion. And perhaps by resolution, we each commit in our own individual agencies that we are moving forward as cities together as a IWMA. That's my thoughts on the matter.
Okay.
That's all the questions I had or my statement right now. Thank you.
Thank you. Dawn?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, thank you, Chair. So I know I sound like a, what do they say? Beating the same drum again. On the budget piece, and I think that the questions that are coming from the cities are really critical and very important because, you know, if you're looking at the calculation of increased fees at $1.2 million annually, and part of that is the education and the compliance monitoring. My question is that how much has been communicated and worked through with the haulers on their own compliance capabilities and how that could be incorporated into reducing some of these costs that are being incurred from the HF and H consultants determination. So that's one thing. And then the education, you know, is that an annual basis of $400,000 a year? Once 1383 goes in and we put some other pieces to play, I mean, I guess that my thing is that I'm still not convinced that the educational component, and I don't see it in the report here where it's opened up for bid. I don't know where that's at. And so I need to have that pointed out to me, but because I looked through it. And so it kind of took me surprise when you said we were opening it up. But that $1.2 million cost is certainly something to really, I think, look at a little bit closer. The $400,000 for education, $600,000 on compliance. And is there some way to really break that down and see if it can't be addressed in other methods or reduced? My comments. Okay.
Thank you. John Hammond?
Yeah, I'm definitely with Don. Again, it's Paso's position that we shouldn't move forward with this item. I won't support it anyway. And I think, again, we should basically be looking at a third-party consultant, just as Don just said, that we need to review our procedures and get it to the bone as to what we really need to do to be compliant with not only 1383, but the other previous ones that we were supposed to be doing. And then with that report, you know, the audit would also identify potential cost savings, and the board could also review implementation recommendations at those reduced cost. You really can't go forward with a budget until you really know what we need to do. And I think, again, if we're going to stay as an agency, this agency also needs to do the 218 process on a county-wide basis. It's going to be strengthen numbers and to have each city do it on its own. It's going to be too far out, too far for timing. I think, again, it's our recommendation that we should do a countywide basis rather than an agency individual situation there. So, again, I can't support this item 13 at this point, but I think really we need to take a hard look at this agency overall, figure out what we really need to do at a minimum and figure the cost to do it. With the county leaving again, and maybe even Paso, if we're still looking at to see if we're going to do this on our own, we need to have options with this agency to survive. And at this point in time, I don't think moving forward with an October 1st change in haulers collection fees is not the good move to do. Ahead, Charles.
Yeah, right. I think October 1st is largely off the table. But anyway, Robert, then I think Jan, then Jeff. So Robert.
Okay, thank you, Charles. My concern here is that we still are under the gun to meet the January 1st deadline, 2022. And I don't have a problem with delaying this until we can get some better information. But that deadline is still looming and I believe that we retained Rob Hilton to help us work through this process to meet this January 22 deadline. And I'm curious, I'd like to hear from Rob over how he feels about if we delay this decision, how we can still meet the January deadline. And the other suggestion that I had seen was that the haulers could simply deduct whatever these expenses are from their franchise fees until the individual agencies have a chance to do their 218s. They could make up the difference at the time they do their 218s and make everyone whole. So I think there are some options here. I'm fine with delaying it, but I'm worried about the deadline and about being able to meet the budget requirements to IWMA and the hiring of people to do the work that needs to be done. My comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. I think I said Jan next and then Jeff.
Thank you. Well, if we were to delay from October 1st, I think we need to consider exactly what Robert was talking about, and that is that we have a January 1st deadline to implement 1383 or show that we're making a good faith effort to do that. So this is something that we can be fined by Cal Recycle, the State Department of Waste Management, if we're not showing that we are really making a good faith effort. So my question would be sort of twofold. One is, what would a delay, what kind of delay are we talking about? Are we talking about November, December, January? And what would the financial impact of that be in terms of our budget? And could that in some way be folded into what we were talking about earlier, which is to have a new look on the data and to see if we can, you know, substantiate the basis for these increases. So how much time do we need for that? In terms of the relationship with the haulers, that's something that I think we may want to instruct our council to talk with them about that prospect. It's made a little more difficult because Peter Krohn has left Waste Management and is now apparently working for the county. So I'm wondering if our consultant or staff or anyone could give us an idea of what kind of delay would be workable under these circumstances. It obviously cannot go past January 1st. October 1st, people are saying, oh, that's too soon. So what are we really looking at here? Those are my questions.
Do you want me to jump in, Charles?
Well, let me make a couple of comments first. Jeff, we'll go next to Jeff. Okay. Patty, I'll let you interject. I did want to comment, though, Jan, along the lines that you were talking about. Linda, our council, did have a call today from the haulers council on this matter. And I did want to double check, Patty. I thought I saw Rob on the line here for the meeting.
Yes, correct.
Is he available to comment? You know, we had talked right before the meeting, I talked off my Patty about the viability and how quickly Rob and our staff could do a set of revised numbers. Patty, go ahead, and then we're going to go to Jeff.
Okay, so, you know, when you say what can be postponed, we don't want to postpone any of the ordinances passing by any of the boards or special districts at the city level. Even the county is going to need to do the same thing. We don't want to put off the franchise agreements. Those all need to be done by January 1st, 2022. And if somebody's telling you different, please plug your ears. We also have inside our cities and our special districts, and even in the county unincorporated areas, folks who still need to be set up with green containers. Some of the numbers are rather high, both at businesses and at multifamily complexes. And I'm not including the waiver potential folks or somebody who may have a legitimate space waiver that we could do, or low population waivers. Those are not what I'm talking about now. There's still several hundred, probably 1,500 in this county alone, who will not be able to qualify for any waiver whatsoever. So, you know, and those are supposed to be set up January 1st. If they're not set up January 1st, then it is the individual jurisdiction, and I don't know who has staff, maybe everybody does, at the special district level, at the county level, at the city level will have to file reports with CalRecycle on an individual level. And they'll have to know exactly where they're compliant, where they're not, and then what steps they will take to get into compliance, and then follow up regularly with CalRecycle on that. Now, as a staff person, I just cringe when I hear that kind of stuff, because it takes hours to do those kinds of things. Maybe your staff at your city or special district or even the county can whip those out. But here at the IWMA, it's a long, drawn out process. So that's all I have to say on that topic. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Before I go to, I see our counsel has raised her hand, so we'll go to her. Sorry, Jeff, we're going to keep pushing you down.
Okay, I lowered my hand. I want to hear other people.
Okay, but, all right, thanks. I would comment in regards to what Patty's talking about here is, you know, our entity, our agency here has engaged in substantial expense already to help the jurisdictions get ready for and implement 1383. It's done so by hiring a considerable expense of consultant. It's hired some additional staff to help with 1383 implementation, you know, all based on the assumption, I mean, on the one hand, that we would probably be together, but more importantly, that everybody would agree to a rate increase to help fund those operations. And at some point, you know, we can't fund 1383 implementation if we don't get a rate increase at some point. So, Jeff, so are you, do you have a thing, or were your kind of questions answered by other people's comments?
It wasn't answered, but several other people had their hands up, and I'd like to hear what they have to say. Okay. Or they did.
Gotcha. I'm going to turn it over to Linda. She has her hand raised, and that's our counsel.
I just wanted to correct a few things just to make sure when everybody is discussing these particular options that, you know, nobody misconstrues. The individual agencies or jurisdictions are responsible for the implementation. So the IWMA wouldn't be fined, the jurisdictions would. So that's why compliance is also individually important. Also, the haulers, you know, the big issue with 218 is if we go forward and the information is not accurate, it's subject to challenge after the fact. So I think that that's the primary concern some of these jurisdictions are raising, at least in their comments to me, that, you know, it's not a matter of having support. It's a matter of not having a lawsuit after the fact, which would come forward against the IWMA. So it is important that we have supportable numbers. I think our numbers are supportable. What I don't understand, and maybe Karen, you can clarify, you made the comment about having the numbers justified through an updated study. I don't know if you meant just justified and repackaged like Jan was saying, or justified in light of the county's withdrawal. So I don't know what we're talking about there. Is that what we're trying to update? And maybe Karen, you can.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's exactly what we're talking about.
All right. Well, I just wanted to make that, you know, and then continue the discussion. I just want to make those points.
Got it. Keith, you had your hand up at some point in time. I wasn't sure if that was left over or if you had a new question. And now I see Jeff does that. So Keith, do you have anything?
Just real quick, and maybe someone can clarify. From my understanding, Senator Laird had SB 619. He was processing that through the system, and that has to do with delaying penalties for 1383 compliance, as long as jurisdictions are making due diligence efforts. I didn't know if anybody had any information on that, which might be a helpful turn of events for us if that were successful.
I haven't heard the same thing, Keith.
So I have an update on that, and it is still, it hasn't been killed yet, which is good news. However, if you look at the fine print, the latest iteration on it, I looked at it 2 days ago, they're adding in a lot more reporting. Again, this is going to hit staff hard. If you don't meet the compliant deadline, you may not be fined, but your staff time is going to be dedicated to answering all the minutiae in their questions and updates, and often reporting often. And if you don't meet those deadlines, then, you know, it's an instant turnaround, right? They're hiring 48 new people in their compliance area alone at the state of California, CalRecycle. You know, they're taking this very seriously. So even though it hasn't been killed yet, maybe it will pass through. But again, it's not a get out of jail card free. people, staff in particular, at every level, whether it's a city, the county, or special districts, will have to document and prove that they're working towards compliance.
All right. Thank you,
Patty.
Jeff?
Thank you, Chair. Question for Linda Summersmith. So last meeting we had, I believe we were reaching out to the county, trying to get some feedback on a plan to leave the JPA. Is there anything you can report to us on that or not?
Yeah, it's my understanding that it's agendized for an official resolution on the 14th of September. What we don't know is when they'll actually give notice. We just know when the when they're going to issue the resolution, and that, you know, that's a little problematic because, you know, so much depends on that. I mean, I suppose they could say they're going to, they could do a lot of things. We just don't know. We have to wait for them.
Okay, and then my other question is: it sounds like we could quickly, if Mr. Ogren is correct that the data is there, we could quickly put together a pro forma that would exclude the county and compare it to one where everyone stays in. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
I believe that's correct. I think the data is there. I think it does have to be repackaged pursuant, you know, to some of the comments that were made. I think it needs to be repackaged and then also reanalyzed in light of the tipping fee issue with the county. But I think it's just a matter of additional information. I don't think it's recreating information.
And Patty or somebody, do you know how long that would take or what that would cost to do that?
It depends on how in depth you want to go. And it depends on the willingness of the haulers. If the haulers give us the data, I will work through the special districts, the city and the county to get that data as fast as possible, turn it around and work with the team. If Rob Hilton is up for this, I don't want to overstep my bounds here. And he can fit it in. He has the bandwidth to do it. And I don't know, Rob, are you available to discuss this? I can't see if you're still on the line here or not. I don't want to overstep my bounds.
I am here and I'm happy to help. And I think we have some budget available in the existing budget that we have, that would allow us to turn this around without having to come back for a contracting action. The thing though is it wouldn't be the full soup to nuts look that Mr. Hammond is describing, and that would need to be a separate process. But this is something that we could probably turn around, certainly for the November meeting, and if we get some cooperation, perhaps in time for the October meeting, to have the numbers recast without the county and based on the adjusted tonnages and requirements, using the existing data that we had when we calculated this the last time.
I personally think if that could be done fairly quickly, Rob, which it sounds like you might be able to do, that would be useful, I think, to everyone on the board here. I agree with Robert Enns that the date is still the date, and if there's another way to increase rates and have the fees adjusted in terms of the franchise refund, I think is what he said, that would be good. I do see urgency here, but I would really like to see those numbers if we can get them quickly.
Thank you, Jeff. And before I go to Dawn, I comment on this in terms of timing. In talking to the city managers, you know, as I indicated, you know, they have to hold their public hearing regarding any protests in December. They would have to, you know, back that up at least 45 days protest period. They would have to have in an October meeting of their jurisdictions, you know, this item on the agenda. So, you know, the timing would be, you know, we engage Rob to do this with our staff. It would be, you know, as fast as possible, in essence, to try to get it done so it could be submitted to the jurisdictions in time for them to have it on an October agenda. And, you know, so it, yeah, time would definitely be of the essence, but to me, it's possibly the best option. But Dawn, you had comments.
Thank you, sir. You know, on the compliance piece of the January 1, I'm just really having a hard time. And I want to just preface this by stating that I certainly am compassionate in thinking about staff and what they're up against. However, January 1 to start compliance on 1383 seems like a big lift for CalRecycle. And not that I'm trying to say that we skirt our compliance, but as a county, we are the ones who already have had the incinerator, the green waste incinerator here for years. County to the north, county to the south, they have only just begun to get theirs going. You know, we've had our green buckets out there. I mean, I'm not trying to skirt the requirement. What I'm just stating is that I really feel that being able to take the time to really do this right for everybody, that there is evidence that our county has been forthright in meeting this kind of mandate before it was even mandated, or before it's going into compliance. And I think that provides some sense of, you know, get it right. Make sure you're getting all the opportunities to check those costs. But that I believe that you know, just on the legislation that we just talked about, I understand that the rural the RCRC, the Rural Supervisors of California, have pulled back their support for it now. So whether it goes forth or not is yet to be determined. But you know, there's a lot of other things going on in the state of 39.5 million people on this. And so I just put that out there that, you know, I don't think everybody's going to turn into a pumpkin January 1. I mean, I want you to get everything in order, but I just want to, you know, say that as a county, we've kind of been ahead of this in many ways. Thank you for letting me spout.
Thank you, Dawn. I mean, you know, relying on the state to be reasonable in the regulatory process might be an iffy proposition. Jan, you had comment, and then I want to go back to something Linda mentioned.
Well, yeah, my comment is that I think there's some very practical decisions that we need to make. One is, when will the fee increase take place? We've told people October 1. We've stated, everybody's saying that's not going to work because it's too soon. Chair Verbeau stated that the cities would need to put it on their October agenda in order to have the 218 and go forward in December. So we need to have a date certain. If we, A, do we want to postpone the October deadline? If we do, what is the date we're postponing it to? And the second thing is that I think it makes perfect sense to have take up Rob Hilton's offer to help us repackage the data, and doing so with good communication with the cities about what they actually need. I know from the city of San Luis Obispo, they've got a real clear sense, our finance department and our utilities department, about exactly what they need to do what Linda Summersmith was talking about, is make a defensible 218. Addressing John Hammond's wish for a comprehensive look at the organization, I agree with that, but I think the timing of that kind of thing would take place after the county has actually withdrawn, so that we know what we're dealing with. At this point, there's still too many uncertainties that have been introduced. And since we do have some supervisors in on this meeting, I'm just hoping that we can have a date certain for withdrawal, because that will help stabilize everything. You know, after we have public comment, possibly we could entertain a motion on these two items rather than necessarily which are components of the agenda item that's in front of us, item 13.
Thank you,
Jan. Does that make sense? You see what I'm talking? I want to get down to the nitty gritty on this and take some action.
Right. I understand it. Robert, you have comments, and then I was going to make some comments along the lines of Jan's talking about it.
Just briefly, Charles, I was told that Jeff Claren from Waste Connections might be online here with us. He's one of our major haulers in this, and if he's available, I'd like to hear from him on, you know, what his thinking is and how they can go about this.
All right. Let me, we'll consider that as a public comment, but, okay. You know, if needed, we'll let him talk a little longer. Let me go to John. I don't see anybody else. Then I want to make a few comments because there's an important issue that needs to be raised here. So John Hammond.
All right. Thank you, Charles. Again, let me reiterate it. And our position is that we should definitely be hiring a consultant. If it's Rob Hilton, that's fine, to basically reevaluate what we need to do. And then beyond that, take that information and hire a professional qualified individual that can do a complete rate study. And that would be set up to be approved and no later than April 1st of next year, which is about the time when the county is supposed to make their departure. So, I mean, we have to figure out what we got to do and how much it's going to cost, and then plan a rate study to get that interjected into a 218 process. I think that is the procedure here to get done. We're definitely not going to make January 1. I don't see that happening. But if we have a plan and the state sees us going through on this plan, I think that's sufficient. As Don mentioned, we are already doing a lot on this already. I mean, we're way ahead than most people. So I think that would be the most logical way to move forward on item 13 here, to get IWMA back on the tracks and get a plan for the future. Again, excluding the county input at that point. So that's, again, my recommendation.
All right, thank you, John. I'm going to make a comment because I need to raise an issue that might complicate the situation, unfortunately. And that is, Linda, you know, as part of, at the same time that we adopted our rate resolution with the increasing the IWMA fee from 2% to 3.25%, we also adopted an MOA or an update to a previously existing MOA that would increase the tipping fee from $3 to $4 a ton. And that was anticipated to generate, I think, $280,000 in additional revenue. And that is in question, partly because at that meeting, the county, you know, a majority of the county representatives voted against that MOA change. And so one of the things that would need to be addressed, I think, that needs to be addressed in some way, shape, or form, possibly in the study by Mr. Hilton, if we go that direction, would be, do we continue to pursue that $3 to $4, or that increase from $3 to $4 per ton tipping fee at the landfills, or do we replace that revenue with essentially a larger percentage increase, and that would need to be part of any revised rate calculation? Can you comment on that, Linda, before we go to public comment?
Well, again, it's, I mean, I can't comment on it. I think we need to put it into the equation. I guess I'm kind of stuck on one thing. Maybe, you know, maybe John knows something that we don't know, but I wasn't aware that there was an April 1st departure date that had been given or suggested by anyone from the county. I was, you know, based on our conversations with county council, it was as soon as possible after September 14th.
I thought I heard, Linda, that it was April of next year when they were going to leave. That, if I'm mistaken. Okay.
We just don't have that level of information. So, I mean, obviously, that could impact a lot of things. But I guess I'm hearing you say you want a full study. I think that the rate study's there. I think it's you know, there is a hole in the data, but I think Rob actually has it. And the way, that's what the repackaging is intended to supply, is that, you know, there's a little bit of disconnect, but I believe the data is there. So I'm hearing you say you want a complete new rate study.
Okay, Linda, let me clarify. Again, I think what we need to do is get a rate study based on bare bones to meet, you know, current regulations. So that's what I'm asking for. If we have the data and we can repackage it like we're talking about, I think that would be sufficient. But then again, we need to hire somebody that's going to be able to do a professional rate study from that data, essentially. I'm not sure if it would be appropriate for HSH to do that, or another third party. That's what Pastor Robles is trying to put out there.
I'm going to go to Mr. Gibson, and then we're going to go to public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Bourbeau. Let me just indicate, I'll tell you how the resolution is agendized on the 14th. Obviously, it has not been passed. The last whereas says, whereas the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo desires to exercise its withdrawal option pursuant to the terms provided in the agreement, that's the JPA. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered. Number one, the county elects to withdraw from the IWMA and terminate its participation in the agreement. And number two, the county administrative officer or designee is hereby authorized and directed to provide, as soon as practicable, written notice to the IWMA of said election and a copy of this resolution, thereby satisfying the notification requirement set forth in section 13.2 of the agreement. So, again, without any, this resolution has not been passed, but that is how it's proposed.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. And for everybody to know, that is what has been posted publicly on the Board of Supervisors agenda website, or on the website that contains the Board of Supervisors agenda. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Right. Okay. All right. I'm going to go to see if there's public comment action and see if the Waste Connections rep is there, perhaps comment, and then we'll bring it back for discussion and potential motion. Okay, let's see if we have public comments.
So at this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, if you're on the phone, you may press *9. I do have Mr. Claren on. Okay, Mr. Claren, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Okay. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, sir. Please.
All right. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Jeff Claren. I am the district manager representing San Luis Garbage, South County Sanitary, Missing Country Disposal, Moore Bay Garbage. We operate the franchise collection agreements from Cambridge to Napomo for trash, recycling, organics. Through these agreements, we can actually apply for bait rate application adjustment every 3 years, which one is scheduled for January 2022. We are actually factoring in the IWMA increase in those 11 applications, which will provide the opportunity to go through a Prop 218 process. However, implementing the IWMA fee that is not aligned with that base rate increase, which is October 1st, would create several issues for us on recovering the fees from the customers, along with having two rate increases within a short time frame to our customer base. As also Rob mentioned, we have been forwarded from the various jurisdictions with evolving versions of the IWMA franchise amendment agreements. The latest version seems to be potentially affecting factors that was originally proposed in the IWMA rate increase. One is being, what was a little bit mentioned earlier, the low population waivers, which could put some jurisdictions in compliance with SB 1383. So with the franchise amendment still evolving, along with the timing of the base rate applications, I respectfully request that the IWMA rate increase be delayed and reevaluated significantly more than the 60 days that was proposed in the agenda item there. And I'm free to answer any questions if you want.
Yeah, Mr. Claren, you indicated that, you know, under your terms of your agreements, you're pursuing a periodic rate increase application for January 2022. Wouldn't it make the most sense from your perspective to include the IWMA rate increase in that rate increase request for January 2022?
We are trying to include that in there.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Okay. But then you just mentioned that the 60-day delay would be insufficient, or are you referring from the 1 October date?
From the October 1st date. We wanted more than the 60 days.
All right. Thank you. And then, not to get too far in the weeds, but I want to understand, you, for example, hold numerous franchise agreements in both, cities, CSDs, and rural areas. I assume, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you know precisely, you know, how many customers you have in each of those areas and how much you bill, and therefore how much revenue to the IWMA would come from each of those agreements.
The problem is you have customers that come and go. People move out in October, you know, if they move out in November and then we don't recover their fees in October, there's no way to bill those people who moved out.
Sure, I understand that degree of specificity, but I mean, you know how much, I mean, let's say some rural agreement you have, you bill $1 million a year, whereas in the city of Rio Grande, you bill $6 million a year. And, you know, I know you guys can be very proprietary about your information, but in terms of determining how much revenue, whether the county ended up collecting it themselves or not, but how much revenue would be lost to the IWMA when certain rural franchises are no longer under the IWMA jurisdiction, you would know that, right?
Yes.
And is there any reason you wouldn't share that information with our consultant?
We shared that with the county. County's consultant as well.
Okay, because I mean, the county's consultant in their report made no distinction, you know, by hauler area. They just made a flat estimate that this is 25% of the population, therefore it'd be 25% of revenue, you know, which is probably not the case because the rural areas don't have a lot of commercial customers and commercial trash volume.
Yeah, we could provide that. I mean, if you guys are going to choose Rob, you know, there's certain things that we'd have to see what they're going to be asking for.
Sure. Understand. Okay. I just assuming the data, you know, in this day and age must be fairly readily available. All right. Thank you very much for your comments. Does anybody have a question for Mr. Claren?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Jan, go ahead.
I do not have a question. I just forgot to put down my virtual hand. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Jeff, I just wanted to ask you about the concept of just using the franchise fees until we could get to January when you do your 218. Is that something that would work?
I know we're talking Cayucas, they were okay with it, but not every city is okay with that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Claren. Do we have any other public comment, Barbara?
Yes, we do. Okay, Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, President Bourbeau. I have two comments on the budget item or staff that Patty mentioned about they're going to be overstressed to meet all the requirements for reporting. We've got our consultant firm earning $340,000 over a 3-year period. How can we get them to help our staff meet these numbers instead of hiring somebody else to fulfill those requirements? The other item is on SB 1383. I have a neighbor that brings over his green waste from the next door mobile home park, Creekside. Probably has, I was trying to get a number out of him. I would bet there's about 300 mobile home homes in that park. There is no green waste pickup in mobile home parks. And I'm curious and concerned that all of this waste is going to our landfill. And when can these mobile home parks be given green waste containers? You know, there could be one per area so that they each, of course, each individual doesn't have to have a green waste bin. They don't have that space. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. Okay, is there any further public comment, Barbara?
I do have one more, yes.
Okay,
and this is a caller. Oops. A caller, to unmute, you can hit *6.
And you should, looks like you might be unmuted. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Your 3 minutes are starting.
Hi, thank you. Ron Crawl with Mid-State Solid Waste, President Bourbeau and honorable board members. I think I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the discussion today regarding the fee and, of course, the 218 process and the need for the delay, which is allowed in the resolution passed in June, number 6, the effective date being potentially reasonably and necessarily accommodate member agencies delayed by the director, I believe the acting director. So a couple points. Clearly, I'm sure this board is not looking to blame the potential postponement of this or the action of this on any recent departures by the county or any recent resignations. This has been an assembly bill or a Senate bill since 2016. And of course, the fee, which is going from 2 to 3.25% with a 62% increase, or a $3 to $4 landfill fee, a 33% increase, is only portion or part of the 218 process. The other part of it, which Jeff mentioned from Waste Connections, is of course the base rate, which has to be approved by any authority or any agency or any city or any service district for it to be passed on to the ratepayers. The base rate has to be part of that 218 in addition to the fee increase. But then, of course, also, I think the contracts that are evolving that he mentioned that, you know, are being done at 13 different locations across the county for it to be negotiated with the individual cities or municipalities, in addition to the costs associated with the designated agency, authority, or company that's going to be responsible for responding to SB 1383. Those all should be part of this 218 process. So when it's done, you go to the residencies and the public wants and get the increase, which I think the city of San Luis Obispo wants to do in January. And I think certainly board member Hammond has talked about trying to do it in an orderly fashion for the city of Paso Robles. So I think it's important as we look at this flux that I think the number 6 item in the resolution passed allows for it to be delayed, and it's probably necessary for it to be respectful to all the parties involved, the haulers, the cities, the contract negotiation, and all the items that are going on. And certainly, I think, can probably be managed into a January 1st start date, allowing for the 45-day Prop 218, in addition to making sure that, you know, we have maybe more confirmation on departures or potential departures, be it the county or anybody else. So I thought I would add those 2 cents. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Crawl. Okay, Barbara, any further public comment?
No, there is no more public comment.
Bring it back for board discussion and potential motion. I would comment that the draft letter that Linda referred to is, I think, sort of or possibly overcome by more recent events. For me, given all the circumstances, it makes the most sense to engage Mr. Hilton and our staff to revise the numbers regarding that justify the rate increase, and to do so as quickly as possible so that we could give that to the jurisdictions so they will initiate 218 process on a timely basis so it could be done in conjunction with any other rate increases they're considering and hopefully be effective for January 1st. As part of that, though, I think it's important that they give us some options. And one of those options would include not having the $3 to $4 increase, because right now that's sort of dead in the water. And we built our assumptions around receiving that additional revenue as well. Okay, those are just some of my thoughts. I'm going to turn it over for discussion and motion. So, Jan.
Yes, I would like to move that that we engage Rob Hilton to do what we've referred to as the repackaging of the data that is there. I trust what I've been told by our legal counsel and former executive director that the facts are good, the facts are there. So that we engage Rob Hilton to repackage them in such a way that the jurisdictions are comfortable that they have a firm factual basis on which to propose to proceed with the rate increase. So if that could be, if we could vote on that, and then the second thing would be the date of postponement. So I'd like to kind of divide it into two different motions, if that's possible.
Yes. Fine. Go ahead.
Second for discussion, Charles.
All right. Thank you, John. And I, I'm okay with us splitting it out because I think we may need, depending on the timing of it coming back, we may need to have a quick special meeting in order to get the revised rate stuff in the hands of the jurisdictions as soon as possible.
As soon as possible.
Right.
Is what. And that we engage Rob Hilton at HWH or HFH to go ahead and do that since he's already familiar and already on retainer.
He's already engaged. We're just providing yes. specific guidance and something to be done. Okay. John, did you have discussion?
Yes, I do. So Jan, would you entertain that Rob would also identify potential cost-saving measures to the board? In other words, in his review of repackaging, what we have to do, that there might be something he sees and that therefore we can take that into effect. In this first motion, I hope that that would be included.
Oh, can you tell me again specifically? I'm sorry, my daughter is calling me on the phone and I turned off the ringer so that I don't have to answer her right now. Can you say, just repeat that again, John, please?
Right. Again, in his review, in Rob's review of the IWMA, that he would also propose and suggest through an audit report, basically cost savings measures. In other words, things that we don't have to do to still meet the current regulations?
I think that would be acceptable as like part two of what he's doing, because there is a time element here. We need to get that repackaging as soon as possible. It's really urgent for the jurisdictions.
I agree. But based on that, then a rate study could be performed on a set of values that we have to do. You follow? That's where I'm going. So if we do the repackaging and we have some cost cutting ideas that the board can weigh on, then we run into a professional to do a rate study, which would be proposed to all jurisdictions. Again, that's going to have to be substantiated through some sort of a study. And I think that's going to be important to do as well.
Well, I don't think that's, I agree with you that we need to do that. I just don't think it's part of the motion I want to make right now.
I agree.
I'm trying to do lean, mean, get something done, and I agree with you and with your mayor that that kind of analysis you're talking about is necessary, but it's not what we need to do right now. There's a sense of urgency. So that would be my motion, that Rob Hilton would repackage the data that we already have. And I hope staff can help me with some wording that makes more sense than that. And identify, just verify that we have the data to justify the rate increase that we're asking for.
John, given what Jan said, I don't know if you want to withdraw your second for the time being, but I'm going to go to Jeff Heller and then Keith Stork.
Yeah, I'll withdraw at this point. Thank you,
okay. Jeff.
Thank you, Chair. I will second Director Marks's motion.
Okay. Keith, and then I'm going to go to Linda.
I actually wanted to get some clarification from John for his second, but since he's removed it, I'll pass for now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Linda?
Yeah, I'm still unclear of whether or not Jan's proposal includes the impact of the county withdrawal in the study, or if we're just repackaging existing data, or if it's also going to parse out the county.
My repackaging motion is basically predicated on the status quo, since we do not have any sense right now when the county is going to actually withdraw. So it's a matter of dealing with the status quo right now so that the jurisdictions can go forward with the rate increase.
But Jan, the jurisdictions are requesting recalculation substantially because they want to know as much as is knowable the impact of the county's departure. So I mean, the repackaging, in my mind, would have to include the consultant's best and staff's best efforts at determining the impact of the county's withdrawal on the revenue side, in particular. Don't see it having much impact on the cost side, but it would have to include, by definition, the impact of their withdrawal.
Okay, I will accept that as a friendly amendment, as long as it doesn't end up taking 6 months. So that's my concern. As long as it's something that can be done. That's so it's repackaging plus an analysis of the fiscal impact of the county withdrawing. Is that what you're...
Well, I'm saying it's a repackaging based on the fact that the county would no longer be with us and revenue attributable to county hauler areas would no longer be ours. And so it's kind of incorporated. I mean, that's the purpose, the large purpose of the repackaging as requested by the jurisdictions. So it's just part of it.
Okay, I will accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay, and Mr. Heller, you seconded. Is that okay with you?
Chair, that was my understanding as well. I'll second the friendly amendment. Thank you.
Okay, all righty. And then Linda, did that address your question or concern?
Yes, that was it.
Okay, thank you. Keith?
Thank you. Just for clarification then, for my understanding, this information, when it is packaged and presented, is it with the intent that individual communities would engage in a 218 process, or is there potential for a countywide 218 process? There seems to be discussions of one way or the other.
Well, my understanding would be no. The intention is to generate it as soon as possible so that it would allow the jurisdictions to pursue 218 if they feel that's required on a timely basis. So, you know, it would meet a January 1st implementation date. As far as, I mean, we've discussed at the executive committee, and I was kind of interested in doing, you know, potentially having the IWMA do it. And I was kind of convinced that was not really a viable thing for us to do a countywide 218. I don't know if we want to go into that level of detail, because I think this motion allows us to get us where we need to go for a January 1st implementation date.
I think my ability to vote yes or no on this motion would be an explanation as to why we can or cannot do a countywide 218 process. I know this has been discussed multiple times, but sure. I'd just like some clarification.
Linda, can you elaborate on that? And or Patty, and I know Rob had weighed in an email to me that same opinion.
And Patty might want to weigh on it in this, but we don't, the IWMA doesn't have the bandwidth for the staff to do it. And it's never been done historically by the IWMA. And more importantly, we don't have the data. So we would have to work closely with each jurisdiction to get the information and the data. And that seems duplicative, especially if a jurisdiction's already going to go forward with a 218 on a variety of issues. So that's the high level. And Patty might have a little bit more information.
Yeah, and I second that. I mean, I completely agree with Linda. It's just we don't have the bandwidth. We don't have the money, extra money to do this. And it's much better if a jurisdiction decides whether they want to do a 218 or not. We are not in a position to force it on every special district, every city, and or the county at this point in time.
There's also just an issue of jurisdiction and venue. The charge that the IWMA has that is applied to the landfill rate, as well as the charge that's applied to the collection rates, are not by themselves property related fees or charges. And so they are not necessarily subject to Prop 218, except that they make their way into your collection rate packages. Those collection rates are regulated by each of your individual jurisdictions. And that's where you have the property related fee issue. Many of your jurisdictions have determined that your collection rates constitute property related fees. And because the IWMA fee is a portion of that overall collection rate, the entity that is regulating that rate, namely the city councils and board of directors and board of supervisors, have to be the ones to issue the Prop 218 notices around those rates that they regulate. And so it's really just a matter of jurisdiction.
And as I understand that, Keith, it essentially means we, the IWMA, have no direct relationship with individual garbage bill ratepayers. You know, we're levying this on the haulers. The haulers, in turn, want to levy it on the ratepayers, and that has to be approved by the jurisdictions through the hauler agreement and subsequently through a 218 process. So it's not really appropriate, I guess you'd say, for us to try to implement a 218.
Okay, thank you for the explanation.
Okay, all right, we have a motion by Marks, a second by Heller. Robert, you have comments, and then Mr. Gibson. Chris, you have comments.
I was just curious about Rob Hilton's turnaround time and being able to repackage this, and I'm assuming that in that he's going to have a lot of information on costs. So I just thought maybe Rob could comment on that.
Yes, sir. My hope is that we could bring the results of the analysis back to you at either your October or your November meetings from my capacity and my staff's capacity to do that. The timing is great. I think we can definitely turn around very quickly. The issue, as always, is how quickly we can get data from the other data providers, and I'm pleased to hear that the haulers are open to sharing information. That'll certainly expedite things.
Okay, thank you, Rob. That's encouraging. With that,
I would say that we, if we don't have it back, certainly by the October meeting, we would probably need to have a special meeting to entertain it whenever it was available. Okay, I think Mr. Gibson or Bruce, you were next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to let colleagues know that I will support this motion and that I am voting on it because I continue to represent, in fact, more constituents that appear to be headed to remaining inside the IWMA after the county leaves than I do that actually might leave the IWMA. And so I hear no conflict among the representatives of the cities and the special districts within my own district, I think the motion put forward is beneficial to them and I will support it.
Thank you, Bruce. Karen?
Thank you. Can I just hear the motion again, please?
Jan?
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, the motion is to ask Rob Hilton and his company to basically repackage the data that already exists that we have access to, and also take into account the fiscal effect of the withdrawal of the county and repackage all of that data so that the jurisdictions are confident that they have the factual basis that they need in order to proceed with the rate increase and the 218 processes.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. I don't see any further comment. Linda, unless you think that the motion needs any further clarification, I'm sorry, I do see John Hammond.
Yeah.
And then we'll... Go ahead, John.
Charles, again, we never really addressed the fact that, you know, October 1st was the date for a rate increase. So we might want to incorporate that into something into Jan's motion to basically say we're putting it off to a date certain.
I would like to do that as a separate motion, if possible, so we can get this done and then have that conversation about the date.
I think they're related, but I agree that separately, you know, we could provide guidance to staff or council to respond directly to some of the actual letters we received and kind of acknowledge or affirm what Mr. Ogren apparently implied to them. You know, that we're, you know, we're not doing October 1st. We're recalculating, and you know, we will come up with a new rate or the same rate we justify. But that could be done separately as guidance to staff, I think, to address your concern, John. I think it's a valid point. Okay, Robert, you've raised your hand again, or is that left?
Charles, yeah, I just want to, I think we're ready for this. I just call the question.
Okay, very good. Let's call the roll.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
I'm going to abstain again. I just don't think it's appropriate I vote on it, so I'm just going to abstain.
Okay, thank you for that. Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Legge?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Abstain.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes 10 and 2 abstaining.
All right. Thank you. And thank you, everybody. I know that was a long discussion. That was a very important issue. And does anybody have any objection to what I outlined would be guidance to staff as far as responding to the formal letters we've now received regarding not implementing the rate increase effective on October? Jan?
Well, one of the reasons I want to do this in two motions is that I confess I'm a little confused on this. I think it would be better to just postpone it for everybody and not get into responding all the individually to all the jurisdictions, because some people it's like, oh, I didn't open that email. I mean, you know. Yeah. And the other thing is that what I really don't know is how long to postpone it. We know that October 1st won't work, but I don't know. I really need to hear from staff and from other board members, you know, what would be the appropriate time for the increase to take place? Would it be January 1st? I don't know at this point. So please enlighten me, everybody.
Yeah. Thank you, Jan. I meant to say, you know, rather than just respond to the specific letters, send out a letter to all jurisdictions to say, you know, we received some specific inquiries. The answer is we're not going to implement in October. We're going to provide a new rate calculation and provide that justification to you as soon as possible for your consideration to enact by January 1st. And in terms of the implementation date, it almost needs, well, for our own purposes, it needs to be January 1st, but even for the purposes of the jurisdictions, because that's when they're implementing their other rate increases relative to trash. And they need it to be simultaneous. Okay, Keith?
No, I appreciate Jan's comments and would agree that we need to delay. I think it would be more beneficial. I think we've decided on a few things today that helps us on a path to a plan and a potential timeline. Is it a decision that ultimately has to be made at this meeting? I'm not sure. Will we get more information from the county after their meeting and perhaps next month have more information or even a couple of months to allow us to make a more predictive plan with a date that we can provide to the cities? Again, I know the city managers are all talking right now and trying to develop internal plans within themselves to create some structure as we move forward. And I think perhaps we don't have enough information to set the date today.
John?
Yeah, Charles, I'd like to go ahead and make a motion then just throw it out there, see if it'll work. Basically just move to postpone the implementation of our rate increase to a date to be determined. That'll be the motion.
Could I just make a comment here? We already had a resolution that gave the authority to the executive director, the acting executive director, to postpone it. I'm a little concerned about making a motion on top of an existing resolution. So I want to be a little bit careful with that. I don't know if we can make a commitment that the executive director will use her discretion to postpone it to a date certain. That's how I'd like to see it done.
Yeah, if that's the case, Linda, yeah, we want to essentially give direction to staff that we will not want the increase implemented until days determined by the board.
Okay, well, that would be an amendment to the resolution that was done in June.
Okay, then we can make that amendment then. That would be the motion.
Linda, can't we just provide guidance without amending the resolution?
Yes, that was my recommendation, to provide guidance that to the executive director to use her discretion. I amending that resolution, I think, has problems.
Well, right, I understand. But I just think for clarity's sake, we owe some sort of response to those jurisdictions that have specifically written a letter, and by extension to all jurisdictions, so we have everybody on the same page.
Well, could it be a resolution to the executive director to use her discretion to extend it to January 1st?
Well, I guess my question is, do we really need resolution, or are we just giving guidance to the executive director?
You're giving guidance. If you want assurances, right? That I think that's what John wanted, was assurance. And I guess she could change her executive director mind tomorrow. So.
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to defer back to Jan and John. Jan, I think you had your hand up first, and then we'll go back to John.
No, I could go with a January 1st date. I think it's really important to create certainty under these circumstances, so that because a date uncertain is going to make everyone have heart attacks. So we really need to, metaphorically speaking, I think we really need to create certainty so the jurisdictions and the members know what they're up against, including the county at this point, because we until they actually leave the fold, they're viable members and valued and important members of this organization. So I would like to direct staff to make it January 1st myself.
Okay, John, your comments, and then maybe we'll take that as a motion.
I would second that motion for Jan. Again, January 1st is more logical too. That's when SB 1383 starts to end. So certainly I'm a little concerned about Rob and his timing, to review and what that's going to take. And then again, to know what kind of numbers we're going to have to perform the duties, right? So. At this point, let's plan January 1 for the implementation of any kind of rate increase that will occur.
Okay. So, Linda, do you have a problem with that in the form of a motion to provide?
No, that's okay. Fine.
So we're providing staff guidance to make the effective date January 1st. Okay. All right. Do we need a roll call to do that, or can we just get concurrence?
It's a motion and it's been seconded, so I'd say a roll call would be appropriate.
Okay. Could we go to public comment first, please?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
Let's go to Barbara, see if there's public comment.
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may hit the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I have no public comment.
All right, thank you. Yeah, okay, then let's do a roll call.
Okay, great. And just for clarification, I did hear you say we're not making an amendment to the resolution. It's just guidance to change the date. I just want to make sure I got that wording right. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you so much. Ms. Marks?
Yes.
And Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
I abstain.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton?
Yes.
Ms. Ortiz-Lake?
Yes.
Mr. Pichong?
Abstain.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Barbeau?
Yes.
Your motion passes 10-2 abstaining.
All right, thank you. That takes care of item number 13. Let's move on to item number 14. Patty, I think this, you'll lead this off?
Actually, and this is was brought forward by yourself, Mr. Barbeau, but I'd be happy to begin it. Just a little refresher, if you go to page 74, it goes back into our history here. We're during the June 9th IWMA board meeting. No surprise here. Executive Director Brooks resigned from his position. And then moving forward, we had the special executive committee meeting where Pablo was hired, and that was June 21st, or interviewed, I should say, for the position. And then during the board meeting, July 14th, it was voted by the board to hire Pablo in the position of the IWMA interim executive director effective immediately. Then, unfortunately, during the August 11th, 2021 IWMA board meeting, legal counsel announced the resignation of Pablo. And we had emergency motion passed to agendize and discuss the IWMA leadership at that time. And again, I'm the acting executive director at this time. Now, what staff is interested in, and forgive me, Charles Barbeau, if I'm overstepping my bounds here, is we're looking for direction from the full board. Do you want to have me just as the acting director until further notice? Do you want to hire an interim director? Or would you like for us staff to go out for a permanent executive director search? Looking for feedback and input, please.
Thank you, Patty. This is here because at the executive committee meeting, and the idea was brought back forward about potentially hiring an interim director. We didn't really kind of reach consensus on that, but thought it warranted coming back to the board and saying, okay, our last direction to staff was to pursue a permanent, the potential hire of a permanent replacement. Staff's not been able time-wise to, you know, do an announcement and get an announcement for a permanent executive director replacement out there. So some discussion was had. Jan could weigh in on us more about the potential of hiring an interim person. But again, the discussion was based upon the full board's previous direction, you know, was to pursue a permanent replacement. So any discussion about hiring an interim would need to kind of come back to the full board. So I'm going to see if Jan or Robert want to make a comment on that before the rest of the board discusses.
Yes, I'll comment, Charles. I did second the motion at the previous meeting to go for a permanent director. Under the circumstances and the delay that we've just passed, I would recommend now that we just try to work with Patty as our interim director until we can get our feet on the ground on the other side of January and then decide what we want to do. Also recommend that we put on our December agenda to make an evaluation for Patty and let her know how we feel she's doing and possibly make some adjustments to her salary based on her performance.
Thank you, Robert, for because I forgot that last piece of that. Jan, any comments?
That's a viable way to go. Another option would be to appoint another interim executive director, someone who has more experience with negotiations on the county level and the regional level. Given what we're facing with the uncertainties of the county withdrawing. So, you know, that would be, there are people who would be interested in helping us through the next period of time. So that my concern about piling too much on Patty with everything else that's going on is that it would, cut into her the operational integrity of the organization if she really were overworked. So, you know, I personally have been in a situation where I was doing two jobs and was paid for one, and I can tell you that's a recipe for stress. So If the board feels that we need more professional guidance in an interim executive director, then we could either the executive committee could interview people, or we could put out a notice of vacancy and ask people to apply. But the problem again is that we're under we're in a time crunch. So that sort of, I'd like to have us discuss those two different options at this point.
All right, let's go to the full board, see if we have comments or questions, but comments about the options of, you know, whether it would be wise to pursue an interim if available, or how we would identify an interim collectively, or et cetera. So I think I saw Jeff first, then Karen.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with Mr. N's comments. I think the last thing the board needs right now is more turmoil and more work, which looking for an interim director is going to mean for Patty. And I think Patty's very capable of steering this ship through the end of the year. And hopefully by then we will know where the county is at or not at. And at that time, once the JPA has been stabilized a bit, that's the time to look for a director if we think that's appropriate. Anyone in the right mind is not going to want to step into this now, as Mr. Ogren demonstrated. So that's my position on that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Karen?
Thank you. Well, my first question is, what does Patty think?
Okay. Fair question. Patty, you want to comment?
Yeah, I'd be happy to be interim or the acting director till the end of the year. I agree completely with Mr. Heller. It's challenging to, one, frame the position, right? We really don't know what it's going to look like, who's in, who's out, when they're in, when they're out. These things, you know, when somebody's putting their reputation on the line to come into a new position, they really need to know what the boundaries are. And we can't give that to them at this point in time. So again, I completely agree with Jeff Heller to hold off.
Okay. So you feel comfortable then hanging in until at least the end of the year?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Keith?
Thank you. Yes, I would agree. I think we're at a time now where it's critical that we kind of prove our worth to anybody that wants to come in and work for this agency. And I think we have some plans going forward that will be helpful for someone to make that decision. I also think coming up to November and December, we're dealing with vacation months and time off. It might be just a little harder time to recruit anyway. And I'm trusting in Patty's ability to do the job. So I would support waiting until after the first of the year.
Thank you, Keith. And Karen, I'm not sure if I actually prematurely cut you off because you said your first question. And were you done?
I was done. Thank you. First and only question.
Okay, great. Thank you. John?
Yeah, I would support, again, Patty as interim until a date certain. Maybe I think, again, even first quarter of next year, because even if we get stabilized as of the 1st of January, it's still going to take some time to get a search done and completed, at least 2 or 3 months. So it might be longer, Patty. I don't know if you are thinking that, but to me, again, she's certainly capable of handling it. And at this point, until we stabilize, I think that would be the best path forward.
Thank you, John.
Agreed.
Any further comment? Anybody else? Okay. I don't know that we, Linda, I don't know whether we need a motion or that, because it is a slight change from our previous guidance to pursue a national or pursue a permanent advertisement. Let me go to Robert for comment and you can think about that.
Charles, but I'll go ahead and make a motion that we keep Patty as the interim director and until the first of the year, and to put on our December agenda to make an evaluation for Patty.
All right. Thank you, Robert. Do I have a second on that motion and then discussion?
Ms. Heller, I'll second.
Okay, good.
I'm sorry. Okay, I heard Jeff Heller first. John, did you raise your hand for another comment?
No, I'll be taking it down. I'm sorry.
Okay, gotcha. All right. I see no further comment. Do we have public comment on this agenda?
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. And I do have one. Okay, Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
One more comment on this issue. I think it would behoove the agency to put the word out, start looking. We're going to need somebody, and if we don't start until January, then we're going to have this executive director issue dealt with again. And is that going to be another 3 to 4 months later? So I'd like to promote that we would put the word out, start finding some candidates, and they should have gone through. There's so many new programs or educational degrees in waste management at all of our universities, well, many of them, and start recruiting from the industry. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. Okay, any further discussion? Okay, I believe we have a motion by Mr. Enns and a second by Mr. Heller. Let's go ahead and call the roll.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Bright. Ms. Compton?
Abstain.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Mr. Newton? Looks like we did lose Mr. Newton. I do not see him here. I will show him absent. Ms. Ortiz-Legg?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Jane.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
And Mr. Burbo?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes with 9 and then 1 absent, 2 abstaining.
All right, thank you.
So 2 absent, technically. Thank you.
Gotcha. Thank you, and we will move on to item 15. And I believe that would be Patty.
Yeah, as noted in the staff pages, CEW, or Corporate E-Waste Solutions, has been selected by staff to begin to manage what is going to become a huge problem for this county, as well as every county in the state of California, which is solar panels. As you can see, we went out and solicited bids from 3 different organizations, and CEF, or Corporate E-Waste Solutions, is the winning bid. And again, we're getting a lot of phone calls on this from businesses. Those solar arrays are starting to fail or start to decrease in power. And so this is going to be a lot of solar panels are going to be starting to come into the hazardous waste facilities in this county. So again, we're just looking for the board president to approval from the board and the board president to sign and update the initial agreement.
Any questions of staff? Okay, seeing none, is there any public comment on this issue?
This time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I have no hands raised for public comment.
All right, thank you. So now we'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
Ms. Keith, I'll move staff's recommendation.
I'll second it.
Okay, so we have a motion by Storton, second by Marks. Please call the roll.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
Ms. Marks?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Abstain.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
No.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Newton, I will skip, and he is absent. Ms. Ortiz-Lake?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Abstain.
And Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Motion passes with 8, 1 no, and 2 abstain, 2 absence.
All right. Thank you. And we'll move on to item 16, which I put on here kind of repeatedly. It's for us to have a discussion regarding our future meeting format, location. Given what's happened with COVID, we may just want to put it off. I don't know. But having a discussion about our future meeting format and location. We did receive word, I think, yesterday or today, or whatever, that the county administrative officer indicates that it's the county actually parts that we would be welcome to use the county chambers for perhaps another year. But I think the bigger question here is whether we want to meet in person or not. And given what's happened lately, I think it would be premature to do that in October. So I don't know, does anybody have any comments on that question, or should we just defer it again?
I'm sorry, Mr. Burbeau, and I don't mean to jump over anyone. It looks as though the latest email, and I might be wrong, Cheryl Price, please jump in if I'm wrong, the County Board of Supervisors will allow us to use the chambers till the end of this year, not for another year, if I heard you correctly.
Perhaps no, I read that wrong.
No, Patty, it was actually, they would allow us a full year while we look for a new home.
Oh, excellent. That's great. And that being said, the second component of that is Cheryl has reached out, and I think she's found a new home. And again, Cheryl, jump in if I'm incorrect here. It looks like the city of San Luis Obispo will be allowing us to use their chambers. Is that correct, Cheryl?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for that correction.
All right, thank you. Jan?
Yes, I was just going to say the same thing. I sent a text message to our city manager because I know they were going back and forth about whether the city could accommodate it. But the time that we meet in the afternoon on a Wednesday is open. It would just take some training in terms of using the use of our equipment, for IWMA staff to learn how to do that. The chambers would be available once COVID decides that it's going to let us meet in person. So the city is open to supporting the IWMA in that regard.
All right. Thank you, Jan. That's good news and good information. We thank the city for that flexibility. We will have to make a decision at some point whether we want to return to physical meetings, given that some folks do have to drive into Sloan to do that. Okay, Karen, I'm going to go with you first, then Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you, Jan, and the city of San Luis Obispo. Appreciate your hospitality there. At this point in time, I'm going to throw my hat in the ring to not meet in public at this point in time. I live in a retirement community, and I do serve many of my neighbors who are certainly very aged. I'm not aged, but my neighbors are. And then also I am very involved with the care of my grandchildren who are definitely not of the age where they can be vaccinated, although I am fully vaccinated. So I would not be interested in meeting in person at this point in time. So I would want to continue to meet virtually. So that is my preference at this point in time. And only because of the Delta variant that we've got happening at this point in time. So that is my comment on this subject. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Jeff?
Okay, yeah, just to, interesting you would say that, Karen. I frankly, have enjoyed the virtual experience. It's convenient, and I don't know what all the jurisdictions are doing, but I know in Morro Bay we're looking at a possible hybrid meeting once it's safe to get together, where we might be able to join virtually or physically in attendance. And I don't know what the Brown Act issues are with respect to that or the practicality of that is, but I, for one, like the virtual approach, and maybe something for further discussion for this board. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Linda, you have a comment?
Yeah, we just need to keep in mind that the Brown Act, you know, exceptions to teleconferencing expire on September 30th. I mean, they may be extended, most likely will be, but we just have to keep in mind those concerns.
Excellent point. I think the key aspect there is that, you know, we are able to do not in-person meetings, you know, that are physically closed to the public due to the governor's executive order currently set to expire. Probably won't, but there will be an end date on that, at which time we may not have a choice but to have some form of physical meeting, even if we are able to allow board some board members to attend virtually. That would remain to be seen. But we're only able to do virtual because of the governor's executive order. All right, Keith.
Just real quick, in Arroyo Grande, we have been able to form a hybrid model that we were able to use for a couple of meetings where our council did appear and citizens could call by phone or participate in Zoom. So there is a possibility for other agencies to contact the city of AG and learn what they're doing. But the possibility is out there if we do have to come meet again. But I would prefer to wait until we get more clarity on the COVID issue and still continue to meet in Zoom as long as we can.
Thank you, Keith. Yeah, we had one hybrid meeting with most of us in person, and now we're going to go back to virtual. Unless there's further discussion, I think at this point, you know, we'll stick with virtual as long as that's allowed. And when the governor's executive order, assuming it is extended in some way, when it expires, we'll need to address how we want to pursue, you know, what our meeting format would be, what our options are, because at that point in time, they may allow hybrid meetings. We do it when that time comes, though. We'll have to consider there is some burden on staff to arrange hybrid, arrange taping, et cetera. So we'll have to consider that when the time comes. Linda, is your hand up or just left over?
Yep, just left over.
All right, thank you. Okay, so I don't know that we need a motion for that. We're just...
No, you don't.
Stick with virtual for now until something changes. Okay, all right, let's move on to item...
Excuse me, President Burpo, can we take public comment, please?
Good idea, Cheryl. Thank you. Is there any public comment?
At this time, if a member of the public wishes to make a comment, they may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of their screen, or if you're on the phone, you may press star 9. I do have one for public comment. Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
As a public, one of the only public members that attend, I love Zoom meetings and highly applaud Jeff Heller and a couple of others who said, let's do that. So you got my vote. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Janine. Okay. I think we're ready to go to item. Any further comment, Barbara?
I do not have anybody else for public comment.
Got it. Let's go ahead and move to item number 17. Any member comments or future agenda items that board members would like to see?
Mr. Barbeau, I would like to make a comment, please.
Sure. Go ahead, Keith. Then I'm going to go to Karen and John Hamm.
Okay. No, I appreciate this has been a long meeting and I appreciate everybody's patience, but I just wanted to share a couple of things and comments where I wasn't sure where the best place was to share this information, but I thought under comments, this would be the best place. From my perspective, I've talked to a lot of citizens, some people in my community and other communities as well, that and have been disappointed with some of the comments that have been made about our organization, disparaging comments about our lack of civility, just kind of the confusions that we've had with some of the recent discussions about working through policies and working civilly. But I just wanted to go through something really quick that I think is important for the public to understand. So I just wanted to make sure I got it on record. When I arrived to the IWMA board in 2019 in January, Mr. Giancola was our acting IWMA director, and his presence was the result of the potential civil and criminal actions involving the former director and a staff member. And at that time, many of you were there. Mr. Giancola, IWMA staff, and the board was in the process of working through a lot of these difficulties and trying to put things in place to stabilize and introduce accountability into the organization. And when I came on board, it was obvious by everybody that was present that they were very dissatisfied with the climate of what was happening to the IWMA. But everybody rallied together to try to make changes to bring accountability back into the organization. So it was really extremely important to right the ship. And together, all of us engaged in multiple processes to not only identify the wrongdoing, but just to make sure that we took measures to identify weaknesses and create policies and practices and procedures to further enhance transparency and confidence and accountability within the IWMA. I looked through our agendas over the last 2.5 years, and I just want to quickly identify some of the highlights of things that we have done as a group to really cement some solidarity behind the IWMA. We decided to meet monthly instead of every other month in order to recognize the urgency of our situation. We approved forensic audits and records and of our records and accounts. We reviewed, updated, and created multiple policies to increase security, accountability, and transparency. We approved an annual internal inventory and revenue audit process. We created a strategic plan to help provide organizational direction. We hired a permanent director in Mr. Stayer, who with staff did the bulk of the legwork and made many of these positive changes. We implemented contracts with County HR, the auditor's office, and IT to create consistency in hiring practices, added expense revenue accountability, and created network capabilities for added security and responsible digital record keeping. Staff developed and we approved an IWMA employee handbook to clarify employee expectations. We hired new positions and introduced redundancy measures to stop the potential for employee misuse and theft. And these are just highlights. I'm sure there's other things that I've missed. In addition to the defined and purposeful measures that we took as a board, along with our IWMA staff and our contractors, our staff continued to provide outreach, education, and tended to the day-to-day tasks of the operational expectations of their duties in a very professional and respectful way. They adjusted well to the serious and important functions that needed to be addressed to really right our ship. And the staff with us today is a dedicated force that will continue to help us meet our regional responsibilities and achieve our goals. I think we would all agree employee misconduct is unacceptable, and we as a legislative body and organization must be accountable to ensure it doesn't happen again. I know for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, we've worked together and we've created the practices and procedures that I mentioned, and I think we're a stronger, better, and more accountable IWMA. Had this dysfunction of the IWMA partnership been a driving factor, the county could have easily pulled the plug 3 years ago, but instead, and I appreciate very much that they didn't, and they chose to engage in meaningful processes that I mentioned to have that countywide solidarity and necessary corrections to make things better. I feel like the IWMA in front of us today is not the IWMA of 2.5 years ago. And we may have had our differences in a few policy decisions, but overall, we were sincere and joined in the need to make this organization whole. We've done good work. There's more good work we can do. And I'm thankful to the current staff's dedication and encouraged by the desire of those members that want to remain and continue with our good work. Our political processes include great diversity of thoughts and opinions. Disagreement is imminent, but actually can be healthy and used for the greater good. In my mind, it's not a game of wins or losses, rather an exercise of trying to be inclusive of the many differing opinions that we're all elected to represent. I am sorry to see the county go, and I wish they would reconsider, but I do want to compliment this group on the many, many successes that we had, and I think we've had many more successes than failures, but just wanted to provide that comment, and thank you for the time.
Thank you, Keith. Karen, and then John.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Director Storton for that. That was really very eloquent and really very timely, and also actually really very true. So thank you for that. And I kind of hate to say what I'm going to say now, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm just wondering if this board might want to consider the possibility of rebranding the IWMA. And this actually came out of the meetings that our city managers had, mainly because of the negative connotations that really has followed the IWMA. So I'm just throwing that out there to see what this board might think about that. If you think that might be something that you all want to discuss, we want to call it something different. I don't know. But when I say IWMA to people that know waste, they immediately say, oh, those crooks, or something just as derogatory. So there you have it. Something really nice following something really nasty. So anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Karen. John? You're muted, John.
Yep, sorry. One question I've been asked by several Roblands in our area is composting. And maybe staff can answer this question so I can get back to them. If they have their own composting device and for food waste, how does that fit into SB 1383? In other words, they're doing their own thing.
So I'd be happy to answer that, John. It depends. It depends on, is it a business, multifamily, or a resident, and where they're located in the county. I'd be happy to look at each one individually and help them work through the process.
I think that would be good to get back out to us, because we're getting constituents asking about it. I think they want to do the right thing. But again, it would be mostly basically in this situation that I'm thinking of within our city limits. But then
sounds great.
For the county, I mean, that's going to be another option too. There's going to be a lot of ranchers out there, that sort of thing, that probably are already doing it, that qualify for meeting the regulation. So I think that's important information that we can get out just to get a head start on this. So if you can respond with some email maybe to the board, that would be good. Thank you, Patty.
Okay.
Thank you. Bruce?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Only rise here to endorse Mr. Storton's most eloquent comments, and I would associate myself with them. Well said, sir.
Thank you, Bruce. Karen, did you re-raise your hand, or is that just left over? Okay. Got it. Thank you. Jeff, did you raise your hand there? Yes. Go ahead.
And I meant to raise it. So, yeah, Keith, that was very refreshing, and I agree with your sentiments exactly. Karen, as far as rebranding, I hear what you're coming from. There's a lot of negative talk out there about the IWMA, but I think it can be salvaged, and it's I think it has a bright future. We just have a few bumps in the road we have to get over, and I think we can carry on as we have for the most part over the last 2.5 years, as Keith clearly expressed. So those are my thoughts about that. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. Robert, and then Jan.
Okay, I just wanted to comment on Keith's statements. I assume, Keith, that you had that in writing, and I would suggest that you submit it as a permanent record for this meeting. In writing.
I can do that. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Robert. Jan?
Yes. Well, I've been thinking about writing a viewpoint for the newspapers, for the Tribune and the New Times, and any other newspapers that would be available, addressing some of these issues that Director Storton raised so eloquently. So I would like to reach out and say, will you help me start putting it together, and any other directors who would want to contribute. So basically rebutting the false and malicious accusations that were made against this organization, during a public hearing a few months ago. And the other thing I want to say is that, yes, rebranding is something we can put on our agenda at the point that the county has withdrawn. We'll have a lot of housekeeping items to do. I think it's early to think about any rebranding. But once what we're looking at essentially is an urban recycle or urban waste, or I'm not sure what we'd want to call it, but basically the remaining jurisdictions are the densely populated urbanized areas of our county. So I think that would be appropriate to put on a future agenda after the county has actually carried out its word that it wants to withdraw from this organization.
Thank you, Jen. Lynn?
I would like to respond to Ms. Marks and her comment about false and malicious allegations. And I would state that if you want to put something up, you're free to put something up. But I would ask that the forensic audit report from Carl Knudsen be put up so people can make their own decision whether they were false and malicious. And it's out there in the public, so there's no confidentiality issues. I think we should put that up. And I also think we should put up the forensic audit report that we did internally that I can't seem to get a copy of that nobody will release to me. So I think fair balance should occur and those should be put up.
Great. Thank you, Lynn. Anybody else have any comments regarding member comments or future agenda items? Okay, seeing none, we have a closed session item to discuss pending litigation and the Knudsen matter. So at this point in time, I think staff, Barbara, you're going to make sure there's no public members, staff leave, and then lock the meeting and be the host.
Yeah, before we do that, President Burbo, can we please take public comment for closed session?
Good point again. Yes, do we have any public comment regarding the closed session agenda?
If a member of the public wishes to make a comment, you may press the raise hand button found at the bottom of your screen. Or if you're on the phone, you may press *9. I have no public comment for closed session.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Then go ahead and proceed to, exit everybody. And I'll see when you're gone. And then we'll enter closed session and turn it over to our counsel.
Will do. Is Patty staying in closed session or is she going out of closed session?
I think in this case, Linda, do you have any comment on that? I think Patty would go ahead and exit here.
She's acting the executive director. I would assume she stays in.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, all righty then. So let's see, Cheryl.
I will hand over host to Patty then.
Okay.
If there's any issues, and I'm kicking people out right now, so I'll be gone in just a minute.
Okay. Just don't kick us out.
I make no promises.
It's happened.
Yes.
And it wasn't even me.
Recording stopped.
All right. Recording stopped.
Come on, people.
And I would note we've also been joined by Mr. George, who's also counsel.